It's time for the one show that takes you into the world of coaching. Takes a different perspective on life. It's the coaching perspective with Master Certified Coach, Doug Gefeller.
Okay, well, as Paul said, we're wrapping it up today. This will conclude 5 hours of fascinating coaching conversations, a chance for the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation to help kick off the international awareness of coaching, which we do once a year. So, hey, thank you for joining us here at octalkradio.net. I'm Doug Gefeller. I'm a Master Certified Coach. I've been coaching for 18 years and working with senior executives, and I am privileged to facilitate a conversation here with two very experienced coaches and executives, and I'll introduce each one of them. I'll give you a brief background, and then I'm going to ask them to say a little bit about themselves. In no particular order, to my right here, but you're not here, Dave Kanar is a business advisor, mentor, and executive leader coach. He has been affiliated with Vistage International, or is affiliated with Vistage International, where he convenes and facilitates peer advisory boards of business owners, company presidents, general managers, and chief executives. Dave has more than 32 years of leadership experience. 32 years, I would never have guessed it, you know, even with the little white in that goatee there. But 32 years at some of the world's largest semiconductor corporations, a long list of them I'm not going to name. And Dave keeps abreast of current business management practices through professionally speaking, writing, and consulting on corporate governance and business best practices. He's got an extensive bio that you can see more of when you go to our international coaching, our Orange County chapter coaching website. Our other guest is Steve Smith. Steve is an accomplished sales, marketing, and management professional who brings only 25 years. Dave and I have got him beat hands down. But 25 years of business building experience to every client relationship. Steve left behind an impressive career in the consumer products industry with such well-known companies as General Mills, all to start his own business coaching company. As president and founder of Growth Source Coaching, Steve's business coaching methods produce clarity, energy, and immediate action for business owners who know their business can achieve more but need help in getting there. And Steve also is a host of his own radio show, Internet Radio, a show called Small Biz Big Shots. Yes. How come I've never been on there? I think I'm a big shot.
Well, if you're a big shot, then we're going to have you on.
Well, anyhow, those are our two guests, and I am truly honored to be sitting next to them and having this chance to talk today about group coaching. You know, the last 4 hours, we have explored all kinds of different types and ways to of doing individual coaching, but nobody's really talked about group coaching, and it seems to be the poor stepchild of the coaching world, and so I'm really excited for us to kind of explore that today and get some definition about what is group coaching and how do we do it. So I'm going to kind of ask each one of our guests to take 5 minutes or so and give us some background on how they define group coaching and what they do. And take it away, Dave.
Well, thank you, Doug. It's great to be here. I appreciate you inviting me in, but I'm now feeling like I've got to have a radio show if you guys have a radio show. I mean, give me a break.
That's right.
I got to go. So let's talk about group coaching. To my way of thinking, it's really fairly simple. If you're working with more than one person at a time, you all of a sudden have a group that you're coaching. I got into this, though, in a very formalized way, as you know, through Vistage. And we put together those groups of business owners, and the purpose of getting them together is to work on their personal leadership as well as their businesses, but mostly their leadership style, and to have them push on their growing edges. So that's how I got in, kind of jumped into that lake of group coaching. The difference between being the group coach and coaching one-to-one is simply that if you're smart, you let the group do the heavy lifting.
Yes.
And you don't bother to do it. And they're very, very good at that. Once you've facilitated the group for a while, they know how to ask clarifying questions. They know how to make sure we're working the right issue. And the group actually helps whoever's issue we're processing really get down to some very fundamental growth issues. And it's a real interesting process. In addition to that, with each of the members in the group, I do one-to-one coaching, which is where we figure out what issue they're going to bring to the group. I try very hard not to solve any of those issues or work one-on-one with them to solve it before we go to the group, because I want them to have the experience of 15 other people to help them understand the issue they're dealing with, whether that's something around personnel or their own issues about being a leader, what they're doing or not doing, and how they're being. So I find that very, very refreshing. In addition to that, I wound up finding myself working with students in groups, which is kind of an unofficial coaching environment. I do that with Cal State Fullerton, and that is much more challenging. The millennials are very different than the boomers and the Xers that I work with. And finding how to bring them out and talk about things that they haven't really thought about, their own style, what they find interesting in life, and where they think they might have some growing edges, it's a big challenge. And getting them to be self-aware is a little different prospect. So that's how I got into group coaching, and the challenge that it provides me is just amazing. I love it.
Wonderful. Well, you really started us out with a nice definition there, and I want to get back later to the generational differences in coaching. You know, being on the millennial end of it myself, it'd be fascinating. But
we'll work on that.
Yeah, we'll work on that. But what I did hear you say, though, is that from your point, one of the things that's unique about group coaching is you're actually teaching people in the group to coach. Did I pick that up right?
You're absolutely right. In the end, that's what it is. And to my way of thinking, this is kind of a hidden benefit to group coaching, especially where you're talking about business owners, entrepreneurs, business leaders, whether they're public, private, for-profit, not-for-profit, whether they're hired guns or they've actually grown whatever organization it is themselves. The hidden benefit is they learn how then to be a coach and a mentor. So we're creating leadership at every level of their organization. And to me, that's the power.
Okay.
The personnel development that they learn how to do in their own organization is critical.
Fascinating. So we're going to come back to that because, I mean, you opened up a whole other area. It's not just about coaching to solve the problem, but coaching to become a leader and add another tool, another management tool. Steve, jump in here. Give us a little background on yourself and what your take on group coaching is.
I'll be glad to. And first, Doug, thank you for having me on this program. I don't get an opportunity a lot of times to get into kind of discussions, common discussions like this. So I'm usually leading it or interviewing somebody else. So this is kind of nice to be involved in something like this.
Yeah, well, we're not going to let you lead today at
That's
all.
Right.
I mean, that chance would be in
not
the room.
To do that. Yes. And Dave, I got to tell you, I know of Vistage. I've not ever participated in a particular chapter, but it's a wonderful organization. So you should be, you know, congratulated for being a part of that, because I know they're very good at what they do.
Thank you.
My origins with group coaching started a little differently, and I got involved in it where larger companies needed teams of people to come together and work as a unit, having come from very disparate backgrounds. So many times when you get into a large corporate environment, the hierarchy realizes that if they're going to get something done that's really important to moving the organization in one particular direction, sometimes they have to step out of the hierarchy and get the little skunk works going on the side so that people can learn and get things going at a much faster rate. They don't have to really report to all the levels. They just need to be able to produce or at least inform the hierarchy in the company what they found and what they think, which direction they think the company should go. So working with groups of folks like that has enabled me to learn a lot of things about group dynamics, which is one of the things you have to overcome before you can get people to actually be willing to work with each other, to confide in each other, and basically do things as a group as opposed to individuals coming together in one room. And most of the time it involves things like policy direction for companies where they're really trying to vet what they've been doing for 10, 20 years to make sure it keeps up with those new generations of employees coming in. It could be new product development where they really need to fast track a concept and figure out if it's viable before they spend their millions of dollars putting it out on the market. And so when it comes to bringing people like marketing people together with logistics, with accounting, with, you know, brand management folks, you not only get a group together, but you get people from the different walks of life with different perspectives on how things should be done. And part of the battle is really getting everybody to adopt to one common way of looking at things so that when they bring their perspective there, it's respected by everybody else in the group. May not all agree with it, but they've got a foundation to where they can be productive in their discussions, in their development, moving something forward. So that was very, very enlightening to me in terms of just what it takes sometimes to get the group to actually function as a group.
Mm-hmm. So help me, Steve, how is this different from team building?
Team building, I look at team building as really more of a top-down type of activity. You obviously want to get people's buy-in. You want the accountability. You want people to take ownership for what's going on. But somebody's got to lead the team. And team building is how the leader functions with the rest of the team, how they respond, what level of either authority or feeling they have about voicing their opinion about what should and shouldn't be done. So you need to have a cohesive group, you know, like a little army team that's out there in the field. You know, somebody's calling the shots, but everybody has a role that they have to play in order for the team to operate successfully. In a group coaching within an organizational standpoint, everybody is going to be a leader at one point, depending on what initiative takes place. So everybody's got to get comfortable calling the shots and moving the group ahead in their area of discipline, and then everybody might have to accept a support role when it's their turn. So they kind of have to balance that if, as a small group, trying to get an initiative together and moving for the benefit of a larger corporation, if that's going to happen, they've got to be able to learn how to do those dual roles and feel comfortable in both.
Okay. You have a comment on that, Dave?
I do. There's a fine line between what we do as coaches and what we do as what I call domain experts. And, for example, Steve's talking about team building. Well, it may be that's what your area of expertise is, and then you become a consultant because you have the answers on how to build a team. Mm-hmm. So I try to stay away from that part of it. If we have a request from one of the members to do some group coaching, I'm very careful to define up ahead of time, you know, your executive team is what you're talking about, you want to have coached. What is it you want to have them learn? Because if you're talking about team building, then I'm going to say I'm not your man. I would rather have you take an expert who comes in and helps you build the team. Now, if you're talking about having your team understand how to develop their people and create leadership at every level of the organization, now I'm ready to talk to you about how we do that, because that's coaching on how to coach, as opposed to going in and consulting and be a matter expert. Because I'll do the same thing I would do at a group meeting. I would have everybody process an issue, ask clarifying questions, push on the growing edges. They, as Steve would say, that would be from the bottom up, as opposed to team building from the top down. So I would have them come up with the answers. Because see, in the end, that's, I'm sure you're going to want to talk about this a little later on. That's the difference, in my mind, between consulting and coaching. Consulting, I'm being paid to have the answers. And coaching, I'm being paid to have you come up with the answers because you already have them. You just haven't dug deeply enough to get them. So I would do the same thing in a group. I would say, no, this group has the answers. You just have to, I'll facilitate you finding those answers within the group.
Okay. Good. Thank you. That was really helpful. But you, of course, every question, every response is going to raise another question.
Yes, of course. I've learned that.
When you say that you are sort of facilitating the team, the group, are you then being the, what's the distinction between being the facilitator and then a coach?
There may not be a lot of difference in group coaching between a really good facilitator and a coach, but I think for me, the difference is knowing which clarifying questions to ask to get the group to come to an answer, or an individual within the group to see the answer. As opposed to simply facilitating, which might be just keeping people on agenda, making sure that everybody has an opportunity to speak, and those who want to be reticent have the right to be reticent. So I think coaching goes a level deeper than just simply facilitating by the questions.
Okay. By the way, that's a good answer. I never thought of that question. I'm not sure I could answer it. So I appreciate you taking the first stab. Steve, you're going to jump in.
Yeah, I think that you can have elements of both. You can be a coach, and you can also have the ability to facilitate. Because in my mind, facilitation is keeping people in a particular direction, structure, keeping them within the guardrails, making sure that things don't move too far in one direction and you get off course. But as you stated, Dave, with the coaching, you're getting the group to decide the topic and the direction, and having them, through the questions and the perspective and the dialogue, be able to determine where they want to take it. And so you have to have, I think, you have to have some facilitation ability in there. Otherwise, it could ramble. And maybe that's part of the process initially, but what I've learned in working with business owners, of which I do that now more with business owners than with employees inside large companies, is they're keenly aware of the fact that whatever they're investing in has to have a return. And so at some point, they may need that little prodding or bringing back to center what they really told you they came there for, so they don't go off in the woods too far and end up being out there. And so I find a lot of times that I have to bring my facilitator hat to help keep them within those guideposts, because everybody's wired differently. Some people can get into healthy conversations and all of a sudden stop in mid-sentence and not even know where they are. And so I have to kind of help keep them on track so that they can work on the things that they came to me for and stay focused.
Yeah, I think you're right on, Steve. It's I'm not sure you can do group coaching without having some pretty significant facilitation skills. I think that's critical. And, in fact, the training I've had has been both. Mm-hmm. And on purpose, we talk about how to facilitate the group. But in addition to that, there's the deeper coaching that we also practice in the group. And that, I think I exercise that by facilitating first whatever the issue is that's being processed, and making sure, like you say, we have some guide rails that we stay within and don't go too far. And there's all kinds of skills. We all know how to do that. But if the group doesn't really get to what I may have an instinct that says there's a deeper issue here, or, we're really not getting right down to, we've gotten tactical and not strategic. That's when I'll start asking questions to help the group dig deeper. So that's why I say I think there's a level below facilitation, meaning digging deeper,
yes,
that you go to when you're actually coaching and mentoring in the group, as opposed to just facilitating a process. I don't know if that rings true with you.
Absolutely. I look at facilitation as just maintaining some type of a structure so that the group can function.
Mm-hmm.
But the coaching element of that is what really produces the results, the breakthroughs, the things that people walk out later thinking, that was a huge moment. You know, I've always thought about that. I've always considered it. I've heard other people talk about it, but now it means something to me. Now I can actually put my arms around it. And you can't produce that with straight facilitation. The group has got to come together with their own interaction and produce those things spontaneously, in my opinion, for it to be meaningful with group members.
Yeah, and I think the way I break that, you know, sitting here thinking about it, the way that occurs for me is I facilitate the meeting, meaning we have the agenda, we have certain things we want to do. When people sign in, they bring their issue, and we determine whether it's one that needs to be processed today or one that could wait. If we have enough that have to be processed today, we may not get to everything. And so the facilitation part of it is the envelope. But when we start working the issue, that's when I might put on my coaching hat and make sure that we're actually digging deep enough to get to what I either know from my one-to-one with that person, or I know instinctively that, you know, this isn't going where I think it really needed to go to get to the real issue. So if the group doesn't ask the question, then I will demonstrate that coaching and that leadership by asking that question, and hopefully they pick up on it and take it from there.
So here's something I would love to know from your experience, because one of the fundamental differences I find with group coaching versus the individual coaching, which is kind of what I do most of now, is the degree with which you can push or pry open. Because invariably, you may be talking with a business owner about how they do things or what they're trying to accomplish, but because they are part and parcel to the business, you're going to eventually get into some personal things, some habits, some behaviors, some thought processes. So in a group environment, how do you figure out how far to push?
That's why they pay me the big bucks, right?
Well, don't give away any trade secrets, but tell
no,
us.
There are no trade secrets. I'm happy to share. So I think this needs to be kind of unraveled a little bit in a couple of ways. So, you know, I totally agree with you. When I'm sitting with you in your office and we're doing a one-to-one session, we start working on something that's bugging you, I can push. And what I have an agreement with each of the members, each of the people I coach, that you give me permission, because coaching without permission is abuse. So you give me permission, and here's the deal. I'm going to push you until you tell me, okay, I've had it, and then I'm going to just push a little bit more. Now, in a one-to-one situation, that works fine. In the group, the big dynamic there is that group has to have trust. There needs that they have to know a lot of things, that is confidential. What goes on within the group stays within the group. And that the egos all got parked at the door. All our titles got parked at the door. Because I have people that are running, say, a $5 million organization and people that are running a $400 million organization in the same group. So it would be easy for there to be a pecking order. But you can't let that happen, because everybody has to feel that they're going to be treated with dignity and respect.
Yes.
So there has to be trust. Now, I have a definition of trust, as you might expect. Trust in human relationship is pretty straightforward and simple. I get that you authentically have my best interests at heart, not just your own. And as long as I believe that of every member in that group, I will let them push me pretty far. And usually you can tell. The group can tell that, okay, I think we've gone as far as Steve's going to let us go. And then I'm not going to push it farther than that in the group, but we may have a discussion in the one-to-one,
yes,
about why do we stop there.
You know, I think one of the it's interesting as I listen to the two of you have this discussion that what you're really talking about are the factors that are the core competencies of coaching, mm-hmm, the essence of coaching. In other words, you can't coach someone, whether you're talking about a group or whether you're talking about an individual, without having a contract. And by contract, I don't mean how much you're going to pay and when we're going to meet. Those are part of a contract. But I'm talking about the depth of the contract, what you're getting at, Dave, which says, what are we allowed to talk about? What are the things that are out of bounds? And while that's important in a one-on-one, it becomes even more critical, I think, in a group coaching environment where everybody understands what the contract is. What can we discuss? What things are we not going to discuss? What are off limits? And if you don't have that, if you're just relying on trust that has built up through relationship, I think you can get into trouble. Because one day I might be comfortable with you talking about my bad behavior, and the next day I might be sensitive about it. But if we have a contract that says this is allowed or not allowed, then it's real clear. Would you?
I totally agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to say that in a larger company environment where you're coaching a group of individuals from different departments, from different disciplines that are all there for a common purpose to figure out how they're going to operate together, that becomes critical because, as you said, very sensitive things can come up that need to come up that the group may decide to take in one direction or another. But when that 90 minutes or 2 hours or however long your group coaching session is designed to last is over and everybody leaves to go back to their departments, their teams, wherever they work 9 to 5, they've got to know, not only for themselves, but for everybody else in that group, that what was talked about in that room stays in that room. You know, they may carry the things, the insights that they've pulled out of that forward in the work that they do, but actually getting to that part, you know, the work product needs to stay in that one spot. Otherwise, if it leaks in any area, I mean, you're done. It's very difficult to get them back into those really deep, needed conversations if one or more members of that group doesn't feel like it stays there.
I think you're right. You've nailed it. And, you know, the interesting thing is we talk about group coaching. And for us, that generally means we're talking about, as you said earlier, business owners, company presidents, for higher CEOs that get parachuted in. We invite those people to the group, but the CEO doesn't show up. People show up. And immediately things get very complex because people are complex. And the interaction of each of those complex individuals in the group and how that group is going to norm takes a long time. I don't mean like 1 month, one meeting. And if you're only getting together once a month as a group, it's going to take many months to get that group to norm. But once that trust is there, then, and especially with a core group, then it doesn't take quite as long if a new member comes in to the group for them to understand the norm because it gets demonstrated every time. So with that trust that I know you've got my back and that you have my best interests at heart, not just your own, once we have that, then the issues that are the real issues about who I am being as a leader can come out and we can discuss them.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's and kind of fast forwarding today where more of the group coaching I do now is with business owners who are in partnership. So instead of dealing with one primary owner of a company, you may have a medical group. And now you have 5 doctors that own a medical facility. And, you know, they all have different practices, but they all have ownership and some degree of decision making for cartel isn't the right term, but it's what comes to mind, you know. And when you decide to take on a group coaching project like that, what you're talking about there can sometimes get kind of dicey.
Yeah, because pretty dicey.
Many of the things that are stuck within an individual partner member may never have been revealed to the rest of the partnership. And so, you know, having those pre-meetings to understand what they want out of that process and what they may be concerned about, so you at least have an idea of where they may have difficulty going, is really important to keep it from burning down after the first or second session.
And again, I think we're almost back to that. What is the contract? What is the purpose of this group coaching? And,
right.
and how do we have a clear understanding of it? And in some ways, we're not talking about things that are any different than individual, but they're I think they're 10 times more important when you get involved in the group environment.
Well, they're, it's more important for sure because it's more complex.
Yes.
It's not just a relationship between one person, the coach and the coachee. It's a very complicated thing. When you get 16 type A people around a table, you better have a loaded 45 automatic to facilitate.
I was going to say, you better be a master facilitator of that. So, yes, right. Absolutely.
Well, let me ask you this. Do either of you ever find yourself in a group coaching discussion, group coaching environment that wasn't formally set up, where you are into a group, you're part of a group, you're leading a group, it wasn't originally going to be a coaching session, but all of a sudden it turns into a coaching session?
I'm actually in one of those right now, and it started out as an alliance of different business owners with kind of a common goal, a business goal, and a fairly common definition of the client that they all wanted to find more of. And so they put together an alliance. No ownership changes hands. It's just a mutual group of people that once they understand how they all operate and what they're looking for and the relationships are strong, then they feel good suggesting clients to each one, you know, referral type things. And it was pretty obvious after the second meeting that there was just a lot of tension because people didn't feel like they were on the same page, and there wasn't anybody around the table helping to bring that out. It was just kind of going where it was going to go. And so I just found myself getting drawn into it. But since I had a part to play, you know, I had some stake in the game there, I thought, okay, we can do this. And so we do it once a month. And you know, for a formal coaching where you would clearly want to do it more frequently than that. But from an alliance standpoint where I'm just trying to keep the group moving in the right direction and feeling like everybody has some ownership for what they're doing and how it's affecting everybody else, yeah, it actually was kind of a grassroots thing that popped up.
Okay. Dave?
Yeah, and that's a very interesting question. I think I'm going to answer it a little bit from a different tack. We all have skills and value that we can add as individuals whenever we're interacting with other people. So frequently what will happen is, because I do quite a bit of networking and I do work with a lot of different organizations, is whether I want to or not, I'm usually asked at some point to, and it's critical that you're asked, because like I said earlier, mm-hmm. you know, coaching without permission is abuse.
Right.
So I'm usually asked to do something that has to do with leadership of the group or getting the group, facilitating it in a way that gets it to a decision. I don't seek that because I'm busy enough. And usually that winds up being some kind of a pro bono work that you do, as opposed, because anything that you're going to do that's paid coaching is usually formalized
right.
somehow. So, you know, I'm fine with doing pro bono work. I do a lot of it, but I'm conscious of how much of it I can afford to do, from a time point of view. So I choose to formalize that part of it by saying I'm going to work with the college. I work with two universities here. And I work with certain organizations that are not-for-profit organizations where I donate my value, my skill. And the rest of them tend to be more formalized. And I was thinking back, because you asked a question earlier about the coaching to coach, teaching coaching.
Yes.
And I'm not free to say who the client is, but a large international client is now saying what we want to do is get to the next level of supervisors who have come up through the ranks who have no idea how to develop their people, and we'd like to have you come in and teach them how to be a coach. So it's formalized kind of group coaching, because it's going to be about 10 or 15, somewhere between 10 and 15 people that the HR people are going to sit in and see what happens, and then they're going to formalize it. The HR people are going to formalize a training program that will continue after we get done putting it together. But that's formalized, as opposed to what you were saying, do you just kind of like fall into it? And I try hard not to just fall into it, because I'm either probably stepping on somebody's toes, in other words, doing what I say you shouldn't do,
right?
I'm going to be stepping on my own toes because it's another pro bono, another volunteer.
Right.
You know, careful what you say or ask where you might get it.
And if it becomes known within your networking, you know, circles, that you will allow yourself to fall into that free will, you'll get a never-ending opportunity to do that.
Gosh, you make it sound so negative to be helpful.
this may sound, I don't know what this is going to sound like, but I'll say it anyway. To me, payment is the most sincere form of genuine help that they need. So if people are going to enter into an agreement, they say, you know, I know you're a coach, I need help, you know, let's talk, and you move forward to a formal coaching relationship, one for which they pay for, I think they ultimately benefit more from that because they realize they have some skin in the game.
Well, it's an indication of commitment level.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would agree with you on that. The reason that I asked the question and is the fact that I think as experienced coaches, you're out there doing group coaching. There are so many coaches that will not even think of doing group coaching, that are good coaches that do individual one-on-one coaching, that are afraid of group coaching. And yet I think they have the skills to do it. They have the ability to do it. And they may even be doing it without thinking about it. And I'm thinking of those situations where, whether it is an informal business discussion or whether it's a family gathering, that you have coaching skills. You can't sit in a conversation without using those coaching skills. They've become a part of you at this point in our lives. And we use them, and those around us that are aware of it take advantage of that. And I don't mean in a negative way, but they look to us for that leadership, that mm-hmm. direction in the conversation. And so I'm just kind of pointing this out because I think a lot of us do informal group coaching that's called for, asked for. And therefore, there's no reason we can't look at it in a more formal way and take advantage of it. I think group coaching is an underutilized tool today.
Well, you know, that's very interesting, the way you approach that. I think, I think as long as we're careful about how we do that coaching, you'll be fine. So I want to get two parts of this to you. The first is, I think in a group situation where you're practicing your skill, if you practice your skill as a coach when you weren't necessarily, you know, the group didn't say, oh, Doug, you know, we need you to do this. If you practice your skill by asking questions, then I'm okay with that. Because to my way of thinking, that's the greatest skill a coach has, is knowing which questions to ask.
Agreed. Yes.
So as long as you're doing that in an informal group where you just happen to be standing around sipping coffee and something comes up and you just start asking questions and the group gets involved, you know you're doing a group coaching session. You do, because you're a professional coach. So you get it. So I think I'm okay with that part of it. And if you're talking about standing around the water cooler or at a cocktail party or at a networking event and this kind of transpires, I don't usually label that group coaching, but I'm okay with it if that's what we want to call it. And the second thing that I think is interesting is you made the statement that you believe that group coaching is underutilized. It's kind of and a lot of really good coaches are afraid of it or not willing to take it on. So I'd like to go back and talk about, yeah, and maybe that is because we haven't explored the difference in the skill set between facilitating and coaching. And good coaches may be, I don't want to stereotype everybody, but good coaches may well be on the introvert side of the introvert-extrovert continuum. They may be down closer to the introvert side, especially if they think carefully and ask questions. That's kind of a good sign of an introvert. So maybe they don't do the group facilitation because they feel they don't have the skills and they're uncomfortable in a larger, they're fine one-on-one, but they're uncomfortable in a larger group. If that's the case, and if, for example, your organization, ICF, wants to talk about maybe we should do something about group coaching, you might start with how are your facilitation skills? And is anybody in, for example, the Orange County chapter of ICF interested in learning how to facilitate groups, not just do one-on-one coaching? The other thing is whether I consider myself to be a business coach, an executive coach, or do I consider myself to be a life coach? If I'm considering myself to be a life or career coach, then groups may not make too much of a sense unless I'm going to talk about basic skills like resume writing and stuff like that. But as a business coach, I find myself in a group setting more often. And as an executive coach, I find myself talking about how do you facilitate your coach, your own group, your leadership group that's reporting to you. And so that's the difference I think I see.
Okay, those are good points. Steve?
As I was listening to you, I was thinking that if you've really practiced your craft, if you're comfortable with your delivery and how you interrelate with folks as a coach, greater chance than not that that's going to be your lifestyle. Many of the interactions you have with people casually, family-wise, coaching elements are just going to come to the surface. You can downplay them or soft pedal them a little bit so people don't feel like they're in an active session, but the question asking and things like that is just going to be a part of your communication. I mean, that's just my opinion. I think many coaches probably get into those situations in a social basis more than they realize. But when it all of a sudden becomes formalized and now you have a group of people that have contracted with you to conduct a coaching group, you know, maybe there's something there that causes them some level of discomfort. Mm. But I believe personally that if you've got somebody that's learned it, that's practiced it, that's honed it, it becomes a part of you. And sometimes you find yourself in more settings being in that frame of mind and in that delivery without necessarily even recognizing it. And the pressure of having paid folks in a group is not there because you're at a cocktail party or you're meeting with friends or you're networking or things like that. So, you know, it's speculation, but there may be that formalization of taking on a group that some people are a little uncomfortable with.
Yeah. I do want to, before we go any further, I want to acknowledge the comment you made, Dave, because I think it's really worth making sure that the audience doesn't miss it. The coaching involves lots of different skills.
Mm-hmm.
The skill of asking questions, which is paramount to being a good coach, can be utilized in any setting without much of a formal agreement. But the awareness of whether you're in an informal setting, that you don't have permission to get into things that could be uncomfortable,
right,
it definitely has to be there.
Yeah.
And so obviously you would not be a good coach. You would be doing a very poor job in an informal setting to go beyond the questioning, using your questioning tools where you didn't have permission.
Yes, I think that's key, and I think you picked, because then you're not treating the individual that you're talking to with dignity and respect that they deserve, because they weren't prepared. See, they haven't formed a relationship with the informal, that I know of, with the informal people standing around at the cocktail party. So there's not trust between all of those people. So I can only ask really kind of mundane, everyday questions and not try to delve too deeply into their personal issues. And if I try to go too deep, that's going to really be a problem in that kind of an environment. So that's why I say I don't find myself too much in what I consider to be a coaching situation informally, only because of that. Because if it's a group, they either need to tell me that they do have, for example, if I happen to be sitting on a board, then I know what the protocol is for that board. I know what their agreements are for how they're going to be as a board and how they're going to treat each other. So I have more leeway. But if I'm just new to the board, I'm going to be sitting back learning a lot before I actually try to do what I would consider any kind of coaching. Now, that's different than if they ask me about something about which I have some expertise, that's a professional expertise other than coaching.
Yeah.
That's different. Then that's why I'm there. So I will add to the board in that way.
What situations can either one of you think of where you think group coaching is more beneficial than individual coaching?
I'll jump in and say this real quick.
Sure.
There is no one of us that's smarter than all of us. To me, that's, a group properly formed, properly facilitated, who has the proper relationship for being with each other, that kind of a group is a mastermind group, and there is more intelligence in the group than the sum of the individuals. It's just an amazing thing. But the sum of the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. I don't understand how that works scientifically, but I can tell you from experience that that's the case. And it's made me very humble because, I started out on my own over a decade ago as a consultant, as a management consultant. And I'm a darn good consultant. I've done a lot in different disciplines within big corporations. I have a lot of experience. But it's humbling to find out what happens at a group. And I that's why I got out of consulting. I no longer consult. I only coach. And the reason for that is I've just learned that as smart as I am, I'm not as smart as the group. And so I defer to the group. That's why I won't consult with my members in my group.
Okay. Steve?
So now that you've taken just about everything I was thinking about, to sum it up in two words, the biggest benefit, I think, of group coaching
yes.
is just the brainstorming mm-hmm. benefit. It could be in a more formal directive like a mastermind, which has certain principles and steps in order to get that. But at the end of the day, it's individual brains working with each other to produce far more than the individual brain does on its own. And there's huge power in that. And I don't get near that done with one-to-one.
I agree. So.
I want to take it a step further. I think what you've said is absolutely right. How can you argue with the power of a group thinking over individual and the creativity that it sometimes spurs to have other people participating in the problem solving. But at the same time, I want to just throw out for conversation here the idea that many times I think to be able to group coach, you get to see parts of an individual that you will never see in an individual coaching session. In other words, my behavior in a group, whether I recognize it or not, is sometimes extremely different from what I think it is or what my behavior is when I'm alone. So I kind of look at the group coaching as not only the benefit of using group coaching to just help the group, but group coaching also helps you as a coach to do a better individual coaching job. Any thoughts on that?
Well, when you were explaining that, the thing I was thinking about was, in addition to the members benefiting from the interplay with each member, I think the other benefit for the member individually is that they rise to that professional level of the group. If they've come to the group with any perceived or known shortcomings, the longer that group stays together, the more you get an emulation factor. And most people want to better themselves. They look to mentors that are better or more experienced, have done more. And if you have a good composition in the group, you will end up, you know, it's the high tide rising and all boats going up. So I kind of like to see that, because I think group coaching is wonderful, but how much that individual can adopt and take back to their own life and practice and make better and improve what they do outside of the group, you know, that's the exponential benefit of being in a group setting.
Okay. Dave?
Yeah, I totally agree with you on this. When I watch when I have a one-to-one with someone in the group, what's going on in the room is the relationship between two people. And it's private. There's nothing else going on. And we're focused on whatever topic, whatever issue we're focused on. But in a group setting, when Heather asks a particular question of Doug, and Doug responds in a way that is a surprise to me, we're probably going to have a conversation about that later. Because I may experience that when I would have, if I had asked that same question of Doug, I would not have gotten that response. But because Heather asked it, and either because of the way she asked it or because it's her, Doug responded differently. I've had those conversations. You know, last week at the meeting, when someone asked you this question, I noticed you shut down. You didn't really fully answer the question. What's with that? Let's have a conversation about that. So I totally agree with you. The group, the individual dynamics within a group are often different than they are one to one.
So I think there's a tremendous advantage to individual coaching if it can be included and incorporated into group coaching. It lets you have another. It lets you see another dimension of the individual to coach.
Totally.
You know. The other thing that I just want to throw out and get your idea on is that I think when we group coach, we coach the number of people in the group plus one. And the plus one is the group. There's 10 individuals sitting around the table that I'm coaching, but there also is the consolidated personality behavior of the group that is different than any one individual. And I think it sometimes begs to be coached as much as the individuals.
Yeah. May I expand on that?
Sure.
My experience is that you're right, but it's the group. It's the number of individuals in the group plus two.
And you one-upped me.
well, the reason is this. In a high-functioning group, one that's really bonded and they know each other, even the facilitator, the coach, is being coached. I have learned more from that group about me as a coach than I have in any course I've taken about coaching or about psychology or about any of that.
Well, you're letting out a secret now to the audience, and that is that we as coaches who are getting paid to coach are learning and getting as much benefit as the client.
Oh, absolutely.
You just went and pointed that out, didn't you?
Yes. Yes.
Well, look, gentlemen, we're running out of time here. I want to give you a couple of minutes to make any last comments, you know, that I didn't let you finish on or you didn't get to express here today. Steve, you want to start?
The only thing I can say is, like a lot of things that people choose to get into, group coaching is my opinion, it's a choice. If you have been exposed to it or if you've inquired about it and you feel like the interaction of other folks in the group who have some common business interest or some challenge with, you know, with leadership or employment, then that may be a great thing for you as an individual who likes to interact and learn and be part of more than just you and someone else. If what you really want is to be able to dive deep into things that you need to improve, that you need to overcome, that are standing between you and what you want, then the one-to-one is a better option. But again, it's the client, the customer that wants it has got to make that choice. And now, they may need a little information and education to understand the two, but at the end of the day, what they choose is what's probably going to work best for them.
Okay, great. Dave?
So I think what I want to say is I think you're onto something, that group coaching can be much more utilized than it is. So I commend you for doing that. And I want to, Steve, it's great to meet you.
Yes, it was nice.
Really appreciate what you had to say. I learned
Thank
from you.
You
a couple of things today. So the learning continues. And Doug, I appreciate you putting this together for us.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before we end, how do people get in touch with you? Dave, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Oh, probably the best way is jump on my website, execleadercoach.com, and everything about me is there and how to get in touch with me is there. That's probably the simplest way. They can get my phone there.
All right. It's the best way. Steve?
Yeah, same for me. All my phone numbers, my email, everything is on my website, and that is Growth Source Coaching. And a lot of people get that. It's like a tongue twister, but it's Growth sourcecoaching.com. And you can find out about me and my particular brand of coaching and the things I specialize in and how to get a hold of me if you'd like.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. I'm honored to be in the room with the level of experience that you bring to this conversation. And I applaud you for your commitment and the time you put into this community and what you the benefits that you bring to our economy through the coaching that you do of the people that you work with. So this is wraps up our day of executive or day of coaching worldwide. Our announcer is going to give you the secret code word in just a minute. But I just want to say thank all of you for in the audience here for joining us for this celebration of International Coaching Week and the Orange County chapter. And we invite you to go to our website and get more information and attend our future meetings. Thank you.
And let's give them that website. What is the website?
I knew you were going to say that.
Come on.
ICFOrangeCounty.gov.
.gov. Okay.
.gov.
You're a government organization.
I think it's .gov.
Or whatever it is. Okay. Well, they can certainly tweet us here at the station at OC Talk Radio, or they can email us here, paul@octalkradio.net. And if Doug's wrong, which I think he is, we'll get you the right link here.